I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Internet Marketing. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 125 of Internet Marketing, brought to you by Site Visibility at sitevisibility.com. And in today's show, Kelvin talks to Daryl Wilcox, the man behind Daryl Wilcox Publishing, about the role of the web and social media in digital publishing and PR. All coming up in Internet Marketing.
Daryl, so tell us a bit about kind of the business that you work for and the various elements to it, because it's kind of there's a number of different sides to it that kind of have impact on internet marketing.
That's right. I mean, there's three big sides to what we do, but to distill it down into a single sentence, you know, what we do is we make it sort of easy for the PR professionals to communicate with the media. And there's three main services. There's a press release distribution, online press release wire. There's a media database product we have. And we have a journalist inquiry service, which when we launched it back in 1997 was, you know, unique in the UK. In fact, when we launched everything back in 1997, it was pretty unique. I mean, we were the only company really in our space at that time doing everything online. So we sort of leapfrogged, the industry in a way, and they've all sort of tried to catch up with us. But yeah, it's those three services that kind of make it easier for PR professionals. And back in 97, it would have been journalists, but today it's journalists and, you know, bloggers and, you know, other content creators, using our services to help them develop content and get it out there. So, yeah, that's how it works.
And you talked a bit there about the change from kind of just conventional journalists to a more wider variety of content producers. Is that the biggest change that you've seen in that kind of period of, you know, putting content in front of publishers?
Yeah, I think it is, definitely. I think it's really, really exciting. And for the last 5 years, I've been sort of campaigning to the PR world that they need to sort of sit up and take more attention to what's going on digitally. And when I say digitally, I mean, you know, in its broadest sense, from traditional media moving to more online mediums like, you know, websites and digital TV and stuff like that, and the other end of the spectrum, you know, social media. So your individual publishing companies, as it were, you know, little bloggers and big bloggers, and but also, you know, influencers, those who actually probably wouldn't perceive themselves as necessarily being content creators, but because they are active on social media and have a big following and influence others, are very, very important to companies, you know, when they're doing their sort of digital marketing. So, yeah, we've been sort of adapting to that sort of huge, you know, change in the media, and trying to sort of take a lead as well, and take our responsibility as a sort of voice in the PR world quite seriously. And so, you know, I wrote a white paper 5 years ago, sort of actually trying to raise awareness of what was going on, and that's, you know, gladly, a lot of the sort of negative predictions that I made in that white paper haven't come true. And I think the world is definitely changing. So it's a very exciting time.
And you know, of the people who are still making mistakes and who haven't really made that change, you haven't kind of seen the growing tide, what kind of exemplifies the mistakes that they're making? So, and the things that you want to be avoiding if you're, you know, trying to get these influencers, these independent publishers, these, you know, new you know, gatekeepers of content, yeah, to listen to you and share your message.
Well, what are the mistakes people are making? I think actually it's difficult really to sort of put your finger on, you know, say a single mistake that is generally made in sort of PR or marketing along these lines. I actually think the real challenge lies in educating clients. And I've always, you know, in the talks that I've made to sort of PR audiences, a lot of the feedback is often, oh yeah, we really understand what you're saying. We understand how important sort of digital and social media is, but our current clients don't care. So the real challenge is, you know, actually taking that role as a consultant and saying, actually, client, you're wrong. And being on the front page of the FT isn't going to sell anything, but having a load of links and good quality content in relevant blogs and getting some conversations going about your brand on social media is going to sell stuff. And that's actually quite a tall order when PR historically has been treated a bit like a sort of commodity. Yeah. And that boards and, you know, marketing directors have not necessarily been open to listening to advice from that community. So I think PR has to step up. I think the search industry really got it really early on and understood the value of content online and the value of inbound links and quality content versus poor quality content. And I think, you know, for a while, the search industry really was, you know, much more switched on to this. But over the last 2 or 3 years, I think the PR industry has really finally grasped it. And there's some really, really clever stuff going on out there now. And what I always like to see as well is that search agencies working closely with their, you know, opposite numbers in PR agencies and stuff like that. I think the two disciplines are very different, but there's a lot of opportunity for, you know, synergy and working together and really making a much, you know, making campaigns much more dynamic and effective by working as a kind of team of agencies. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how agencies evolve over the next 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely that almost press syndication sites and wires and those types of things have, you know, two distinct users that you talked about there, the PR industry and the search industry, who seem to be, you know, although there's a coming together now, I think, you know, in the past, perhaps we're using for very different reasons. Mm-hmm. So the PR industry, from my impression, is far more about actually getting in front of the eyes of someone who is going to write about them. Whereas for the search industry, it was almost a means unto itself, is that the wire was the purpose of, you know, to get the content on that wire. Is that changing in terms of, because as a customer of your wire as opposed to other wires, you know, one of the things that I prefer is the fact that there is that potential there that's much more significant, that someone is actually going to read it, whereas some of the other ones are far more, you know, it's about where their content gets republished. It doesn't actually get really it, and that's done automatically, algorithmically. There's no actual editorial control there. Do you think that's changing?
Yeah, I think the two are coming together. In as much as a lot of our search clients are really looking to not just generate inbound links, but also to sort of get real audience, and also not just syndication, but for that content to be reused by humans, which is sort of what PR is all about, and PR is getting a bit more technical at the same time. Whereas there is a gradual understanding of the importance of things like, you know, keywords and embedded links. So the two are sort of drifting together, but I still see that, you know, that they are quite separate disciplines, and that if you were as a client, and you know, I have a PR agency, and I we do SEO in house, but we do pay per click with a third party. As a buyer of these services, I do consider them to be separate, but they do need to work together.
Yeah.
And I think that's really the future. I think we'll get super agencies where, you know, they'll be providing SEO and PR and, you know, advertising or digital advertising all under one house, but they're not going to work for everybody. I mean, they'll maybe the bigger brands, well, that will make sense for global brands, but that's not going to work for the enormous number of SMEs that are around. And I think it's SMEs for which, you know, that, you know, search and digital PR offers the greatest opportunities, because there's enormous potential return on investment there, and sort of other marketing disciplines can be extremely expensive, you know, perceived to be extremely expensive. So I do see a sort of gradual merging of the disciplines, but yeah, I think I wouldn't dare predict, you know, how it's going to go from here.
Yeah, I mean, generally as a species, I think we're generally pretty poor at predicting the future, but we can normally, you know, yeah, just see general trends of where things are going. And, you know, with that trend of, you know, search marketers and digital marketers getting more, you know, savvy and, you know, picking up more of the skill sets and the approaches of more traditional public relations and, you know, communications industry, are you starting to see a change in, particularly for the kind of the media database side of the business, you know, kind of people like myself saying, okay, well, actually, we've produced this survey on behalf of our client, that we've produced it in such a way that we want it to get links rather than, mentions. You're seeing more and more of those types of things and, you know, that movement as well.
Yeah, I think what's going on in that world, I mean, our media database product is in many ways, you know, it's an organic thing, because 5 years ago, we would have been listing a lot more traditional journalists. But a lot of them have gone.
Yeah.
They've been made redundant or whatever. But, you know, we're now adding, you know, top bloggers. There are new online media products opening all the time, niche, you know, sort of what I call sort of like, you know, there's a big talk at the moment about hyperlocal. Well, I think there's a movement towards hyper niche.
Yeah.
Where you've got media outlets that cross a vertical and a horizontal market and are very, very, very niche. And that's where our media database is becoming really, really valuable again, because, you know, we're sort of picking up on these new media outlets. And yeah, and as for a user, you know, whether whether you want content to be distributed and reproduced across as many outlets, or whether you're just looking for inbound links, really, this data is usable for either purpose, you know. So, and the other thing as well is that, you know, journalists can influence your brand not just through the content they're generating for their main product, but just through their behaviour, day-to-day behaviour. So a lot of them are tweeting. A lot of them have got their own blogs. And so they could be not just writing about your brand in their sort of, you know, magazine or newspaper or whatever, but they could actually be talking about your brand online. And these people have a lot of followers and they have a lot of influence as individuals. So, you know, we're sort of adding social media links for all the journalists and, you know, building up their profiles so that, you know, you can identify who are going to be the key individuals. And so it works on many different levels.
And, you know, from my background prior to getting into SEO, I kind of worked for what was EMAP, but is now Bauer, and the editorial teams there at magazines like FHM and Zoo and that. And I know that the journalists there were kind of inundated with these pitches of certain types. And I know that there's changes there, but it was quite interesting to me to see this whole rise of the journalist asking for the content as opposed to the other way around with a help a reporter out kind of Harrow style approach. Yeah. And do you think that's actually where, you know, as much as these databases can be really helpful and they can be more involved and they can be more specific, so it's going after, you know, exactly the right type of person to pitch your story to rather than, you know, a wide sway for people. Do you think that's actually maybe the way that it'll go, where it's these journalists of all shapes and forms asking to be pitched on a particular topic at a particular time that's most likely to be successful for the person doing that pitching?
Yeah, I think that's definitely...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A big movement. I mean, we... you know, very proud of the fact that, nearly 15 years ago, we launched Response Source, which is our journalist inquiry service. And, you know, we were first in the UK and remain the biggest service in the UK. And that service is constantly evolving. We've even sort of like bent the rules a bit, and we actually allow sort of PR to PR inquiries and stuff like that. So it's becoming more of a sort of community rather than just sort of a one-way sort of communications platform. But definitely this concept of the journalist as their normal daily work requesting information via these kinds of services, and to they're often using social media to do this. And a lot of people said to me, oh, well, you know, surely people don't need Response Source anymore because they're using Twitter. And it's like, well, yes, maybe, but only if all the right people are following you, or all the right people are actively searching, or have got proper searches going on Twitter and are monitoring social media. It's not really necessarily going to work. It does work to a certain extent if you're a very, very well-known journalist and you've got 5,000 followers or something. But even then, it's a bit like the old days where journalists would sort of simply rely on their own contacts book for information. What's great about Response Source is it's a closed network, but it's also a network that's specific to the PR community. So when you send out requests, those requests are going to people who are trained, and it's their job to provide journalists with relevant information. So I think it's got a very valuable place. And what's happened with the fact that social media is being used for similar things is it's actually made it a lot easier for us to communicate how Response Source works, because people sort of really get it now. It's like, okay, I can put a request out using online channels and get information back. And that's really put journalists sort of back in control, because I think, in the 90s, they were just completely deluged with information. I remember getting sort of 100 press releases a day when I was working, as a journalist on a technology magazine in the sort of 1994 or whenever it was. And paper press releases, just piling up on your desk. It was just a crazy situation. And then every Tuesday afternoon, press day, we'd be waiting by the fax machine, for like statements to be coming back from sort of PR professionals. It was just a ridiculous situation. So all these tools have really made the job of the role of a journalist a lot easier. And I think it's fantastic. And I think they'll just evolve and get more sophisticated as time goes by.
And any tips then, because that changes the dynamic, because when you're putting out a press release or the like, and it's the kind of you're broadcasting hoping that a journalist will bite, there's certain approaches that you would want to use. And I suppose, although digital has changed some of that, you're going to want to be including keywords. You're going to want to be thinking about the keywords. You're going to be wanting to think about the types of links that you're including in the multimedia content with it. I suppose in some extent, that's probably not really changed that much from, when you were first doing press releases. But does that change quite drastically when the journalist has expressed what they want? Do you have to pitch in quite a different way?
Yes, you do. You have to pitch in a much more succinct way. It's very dangerous to, reply to a request from a journalist with a 400-word press release, especially as an attachment. Yeah. You've pretty much got two sentences to grab their attention. And there's a time issue as well, because when a request comes out, on Twitter or on Response Source or another service, you've got to react very quickly if you've got relevant information for them, because there will be many others. But at the end of the day, it's relevancy is absolutely critical. So you've got, just get that point across in the first couple of sentences, what it is that you've got and how it's relevant. Unfortunately, and I'm sure this happens as much on Twitter as it does on Response Source, a lot of PRs do chance it a bit. So a journalist might put a request out, and PRs who, not thinking, particularly intelligently, might just try and wedge their story in some way or other. And it's actually quite amazing how much sort of rubbish journalists receive when they put requests out, which is a real shame, because it's kind of putting them off the concept of using that sort of research technique. But yeah, it is very different to writing a press release. And I think the whole sort of press release construction issue is much more sophisticated than it was now than it was, say, 10 years ago. I mean, 10 years ago, it was like, right, okay, we get the facts and the quotes in there, And, you know, we try and get a decent headline and intro that is going to, you know, capture attention. It's got the main story in. And then you put the contact details at the bottom and that's it. You know, the other issue is timing and the other issue is who do you send it to. But now you've got, you've got to think about your keywords. You've got to think about what embedded links you might use. You've got to think about what pictures you might include. And using a lot of online distribution tools, you can attach a picture, which it doesn't cause a problem for the journalist because it's not going out by email. It's just it's linked to online. So it's a great way of getting pictures out. Pictures will often sell a story. So you've really got to think about the visual elements of the story. And then there's things like, you know, pulling out relevant quotes and highlighting them. You've got to think about sort of what sort of meta tags you might want to highlight. And these aren't necessarily just about search issues. These are about helping the journalists find the information, not necessarily about generating, you know, better search rankings for your clients. So it's worth considering all these issues. It's not just about, you know, SEO and the technical elements of SEO. You know, this is where I think PR and SEO really does get very, very close. You know, and there's all these other elements of what people have called the social media press release, which is a phrase I'm not a big fan of, because I think, you know, we've been doing social media press releases since 1997, when we first put press releases online publicly, you know, not behind a login or anything. They were something that became a commodity that any consumer of information could use. All the other elements, you know, embedded links, images, links to relevant content, video, they're all just ultimately just bits and pieces that you may or may not include depending on the release.
Yeah, because that's a tricky one, isn't it, for some people, where it's that you go to particularly some of the American wires and it's this kind of, they're constantly trying to upsell you to the enhanced version of the press releases. And I think in some cases, you know, there's elements of it that are worth having. It's like without the links, then it's not worth doing it from an SEO perspective. And maybe the pictures do help, you know, get some cut through there. But I do think sometimes there's this temptation to, you know, oh, it's only $50 more to get a tweet this button here. And it's like, well, I've not seen many press releases tweeted unless it's supremely newsworthy. And at that point, I'm not sure it was the button that did that.
No, of course, you're absolutely right. I think you've got to think what is going to work with this release, what is going to help this particular release, and think about the context. I mean, in certain cases, you know, text only, depending on the story, would be absolutely fine. What I find that quite amusing is if you actually look at a social media press release template in all its glory, it's the sort of thing that no reader would go near with a barge pole, because it's an absolute dog's dinner. You know, you've got sort of like boxes here, boxes there, links there, relevant content there. It's just a complete disaster. And anyone with any sort of design sensibilities would say you'd never produce a document that looks like that, whether it's online or offline or whatever. So I think you've got to really think intelligently about what you include in your release and what you don't.
And do you think that many of the listeners of the podcast might not be kind of experienced PR people, and whether do you think that they can be capable of, you know, putting these releases together, or even more so on the kind of pitching journalists? You know, is that a type of skill that you can learn and you can do as a kind of, you know, business owner in an SME, or maybe, you know, so you're a marketer in general and PR is only kind of like one of about 20 things that you've got to do in your day job. Do you think that actually it's kind of democratized that element of it a little bit?
Yeah, I think so. I think PR is not a sort of black art. You don't have to be an ex-journalist, you know, to do it. If you're open-minded and you've got a little bit of time, and I think that's probably the critical factor. If you've got a couple of hours a week to sit down and learn about, you know, how to craft a press release, how to identify your audience, how to put a press release together, how to pitch to journalists, how to then measure and follow up, then you could be quite successful in doing it yourself. And I know lots of small business owners have had really, really good results. And it's the sort of thing that builds over time as well. So you do need to have a bit of patience. So when you start doing your own PR, you're probably not going to get massive results straight away. It's the sort of thing that builds over time. And in many cases, you know, journalists won't respond to your organisation perhaps until you've communicated with them about 3 or 4 times. And they think, oh, yeah, I remember that first time they contacted. I thought that was quite a good story, but I didn't really have time, or I didn't have space. I'm going to speak to them this time. So it sort of builds up over time. But it's absolutely something that people, other marketers or business owners can pick up. But I think it is a time issue. And if you are really desperately short of time, I always say go and use a PR agency or not necessarily a PR agency, but, you know, maybe a marketing agency who's got PR skills within the organisation, or even a search agency, you know, because I think there's it's perfectly legitimate that, you know, a client of a search agency who maybe doesn't have a budget for a full PR service from another agency might say to a search agency, look, can you do a little bit of PR on the, you know, while you're doing the SEO? And I think perhaps, I mean, you might experience that with some of your clients. I know that quite a few of the search agencies are doing a certain amount of PR, and they've brought in PR professionals, or they've learned how to do it themselves.
And in terms of those people who want to go out and learn a bit more themselves about how to use any particular websites or resources or books that you can, or is it kind of one of these ones, if you do a good Google, you'll probably be able to find some pretty good advice?
If you do a good Google, you probably will get loads of advice. Some of it might be conflicting. And also you have to remember that the media culture in different territories is different. So what a US person might be saying is a good sort of PR activity may not work in the UK, but... I mean, not wanting to sort of, you know, promote our own services, but we have got a special section on our site for SMEs. It's dwpub.com/smallbusiness. Mm. And there's a few resources there. We've got a white paper that was written by a PR professional and it's basically how to do your own PR. And that's aimed primarily at, you know, your sort of micro business SME. But yeah, there's loads of resources out there. So it's not difficult to sort of get those skills, really.
Fantastic. Thanks for that, Darryl. Really appreciate some interesting tips and advice there. And yeah, definitely an area where I can see that the search industry and the PR industry coming together and learning from each other's respective skills, and the whole interesting dynamic of the changing nature of a publisher makes it quite an interesting place to be working at the moment, I can imagine.
Yes, it certainly is. Yeah, thank you very much, Kelvin.
Cheers. Thank you.
Well, that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening. You can find us on the internet at www.internetmarketingpodcast.org, where you'll find show notes, links, and instructions on how to subscribe. We would absolutely love to get feedback, comments, and questions from you. If you want to send an email, send it to kelvin.newman@sitevisibility.com. Also, feel free to comment on the website. And if you'd like to use our voice line number, if you're outside of the UK, it's +44 1273 256 150. If you're inside the UK, it's 01273 256 150, and you can leave a voice comment or question and we'll play it on the show. Also, we would absolutely be delighted if you would give us a rating on iTunes itself. Well, that's it for now. Andy White signing off until next week on Internet Marketing.